Hello, everyone, and welcome to Let's Take a Stab at It. I'm your host, John Hoyer, and with me is...
Jason Bartsch, and with us is...
Hey, what's going on, guys? It's me, Trevor. What's everybody doing tonight?
Trevor with a fresh webcam. We can see him for the first time in Stab history.
Yeah, we can see all the weird shit he's doing when we're recording.
I know, I'm like flopping around like a fish, you know?
For those at home, we've realized that when Trevor makes a really corny joke, we get to see how embarrassed he is afterwards. So it does help a lot. Like, he's in on the joke a little
bit. We're also not totally convinced he's been present the entire episode. So this is for accountability more than anything.
We're like Amazon warehouse where we want to make sure we can watch every movement of this.
He's just like playing Xbox and Trevor.
Oh yeah, gosh, yeah, the knife with the guy in it, yeah.
Just hear a distant boom headshot.
All right, so Jason, what have you been watching this week?
So I am proud to say that I have now watched The Thing, which we talked about a little bit in the last episode. Yeah, some people, myself included, may say I was bullied into watching it, but yes, I watched it nonetheless. John was generous enough to send me the Blu-ray, and I checked it out. And it's awesome. It's everything it's cracked up to be. It's really like, man, side by side with Halloween, that film, it's like, it's so different. Mm-hmm. But it's like amazing in its own right. It's crazy. Oh, yeah. The effects really hold up. I thought, the way the thing contorts and all that jazz.
It's still so gross watching.
Horrifying. It's so shocking. Like, I was like, I think I audibly gasped a couple times, and like, I don't know if I just expect older movies. Like, I'm like, I've seen it all, and then I'm like, oh.
But also, yeah. I mean, this is like peak badass Kurt Russell era. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like that he breaks through the one window and you find him and he's all frozen looking. Like,
oh yeah. Yeah, cool. I like that he was like kind of the bad guy for a little bit. He was pretty scary when everybody kind of was suspecting him maybe a little bit. Yeah,
it's great. It's weird to think of how when the movie came out, at the time people were like, "Oh, this is so regressive." We had E.T. and like that was an enlightened version of like of aliens, and then they go to The Thing and they're like, we've done this before. And like now it's considered like his maybe John Carpenter's best movie, one of the best movies of the 80s, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. It was great.
Yeah, the thing I love about it too is just the sheer paranoia of like the situation, but also in an isolated area. Like, I mean, yeah, they have all of Antarctica, but they are isolated in that, just their shelter.
But it's also like they use it as a way of like, it's almost like also they're kind of happy that this is happening right then and there, because it's like, well, we can't let it get out from here.
Right.
Because if it was to go into the rest of society, it would keep going and take over and all that stuff.
That's what's so eerie about the ending is like, you're not quite sure, like, you know, if one of them might still be the thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just, yeah, I thought that was really cool. And what does Kurt Russell say? Like, oh, we can just wait and see. Because either they're going to die or one of them's going to live on.
And also, I think another, obviously, one of the best scenes is when they are testing the blood out. Oh, and yeah. Like, we don't know who has it. And with like what Trevor was saying about the paranoia, they don't completely let you know who is the thing or whatever. So you don't quite know the full progression or how it completely works. It's just like you're kind of in the dark as well.
Yeah. And I loved how they let that blood scene, which basically what happens is Kurt Russell ties everyone up and, you know, gets a little sample of their blood. And then he like touches it with a hot wire, basically. And the thought process is that every part of this thing, the creature, is like its own living organism. So in theory, the blood will, you know, freak out when it's burned. But I love how they let that scene almost play out in real time, how they like, you know, it would have been very easy to like test one or two and then like have like a freak out. But it's like it almost gets to the point where you're like, is Kurt Russell crazy? Like, is this even going to work? Yeah. And it's just like, I love how they like kind of kept playing it off and you get to see everybody's reaction. Like, because even like the people don't even know, like, am I a thing? I don't know. Like,
you get to see their anxiety. Would you even know that you were like,
would you know? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a interesting thought. I mean, we just went through a whole pandemic, still going through, I guess, with the, not fully knowing, like, you know, the ins and outs of like the coronavirus and whatnot. So, you know, it can, it's easy to hop into that like mindset and the paranoia that it creates.
Absolutely. No, it was great. I loved it. So thank you for
bullying you. Yes.
Bullying me. Encouraging me, I guess we'll say.
I just like the idea that I've like unlocked the best way to get you to watch something is to buy it for you. Like if it's a good quality Blu-ray, you'll be like, well, I guess I have to watch it on my 4K TV.
Yeah, why not? Why not? So what have you been watching, John?
All right. So I'll be pretty quick on this. So I've
heard this before.
fuck you, Jason. All right. So over the last like 2 weeks, I've been watching the Wong Kar-wai Blu-ray set that I got. That's from Criterion. It's like got 7 of his movies. Most of them are excellent. If you haven't seen a Wong Kar-wai movie, definitely check out In the Mood for Love or Chungking Express like first. I think those movies are probably his best.
Yeah, they're both fantastic. Those are other movies that I was bullied into watching by, but more so Liam, one of our previous guests. And you had a little bit of a part in it, John.
A little bit, a little bit.
But they're very good.
It's interesting though, because I actually, a bunch of them I rewatched, and this time around I was like, even though I've seen them before and I liked them before, I was blown away this time. I think 2046 in particular was incredible. Aside from that, for like an actual horror thing to talk about, I watched the movie Event Horizon, which I don't know if anyone's seen that. It was kind of like an underappreciated movie when it came out in 1997. It got like a really low rating on Rotten Tomatoes, but I saw it when I was like, well, you know, surprise, surprise, I saw it when I was very little. And it scared the shit out of me. So I wanted to rewatch it, and I saw that they upgraded on iTunes to like a 4K version. So I was like, let's do it. And so for those that don't know, the movie is about, there's this spaceship called the Event Horizon. It disappears for like 7 years. It reappears outside of Neptune. And then this crew goes in to go investigate what happened to the, you know, the crew members of the Event Horizon. And it's basically like a sci-fi horror movie. Like the sci-fi element is there, but it's mostly just horror. And that the ship that they get on is, in a way, kind of like a haunted house of sorts, where everyone is seeing different visions of things that are messing with them. People are getting killed. There are grisly deaths.
Huh.
I gotta say, for a horror movie, pretty...
It's a good midnight movie, right? Good
midnight. I'd say so, yeah. Midnight. No, it's got Sam O'Neill, Lawrence Fishburne, and they're really good in it. So I would recommend it.
Nice.
Trevor, I don't know if we have the time, but what have you been watching?
I've been watching it. I watched this little indie darling called Godzilla versus Kong. I saw Godzilla versus Kong. I really liked it a lot. I'm a sucker for monster movies. Like, I love mm-hmm. Godzilla ever since I was a child.
You mean big monsters?
Big monsters, yeah. Not like human monsters. I just love monster movies. I love the current MonsterVerse that's going on. I liked it. I think Godzilla versus Kong, it kind of eliminates some of the problems that the current films had. Mm-hmm. With, and they kind of like, you know, they pretty much gave what people they wanted, which is the monsters fighting, you know, Godzilla and Kong fighting. And, you know, it's a good amount of fighting, too.
It doesn't take itself as seriously as that one that came out like 5 years ago or whatever, does it? Like,
No.
That one was really dark and just very serious. I'm like, this is a Godzilla movie?
So that, yeah, this
I didn't
one's,
like that one.
This one's much sillier.
Very much sillier. Very like,
I would say it's way more like Fast and Furious kind of silly and ridiculous and not Transformers, which is bad.
It'd be cool if they did like a film series like this, where like whoever wins the movie like goes on to the next movie, like Godzilla versus Optimus Prime or whatever the next one is.
Like a WrestleMania kind of style movie. Yeah.
Godzilla is 3-0 heading into this movie.
Right.
Well, they do this like thing where I guess they must have seen people complain about like Batman v Superman, where it wasn't like a very clear winner. So each time someone like one of them beats the other in a scene, someone's like, oh, Godzilla won this round.
Yeah, exactly.
They have to tell people that, so that way, like, the dummies in the audience will be like, okay, I get it. Yeah. All right, well, Godzilla's coming back.
I like these movies when they're fun. There was this old one. I don't know if you guys saw it. It was in some, like, horror five-pack DVD. You know how they used to put, like, a bunch of horror movies in one DVD collection? It was called Godzilla versus Biolante. Or something like that.
Oh, I love that one's cool. Yeah.
It's from the 80s. Biolante is like this like dinosaur sea creature thing, but that one was fun.
It's a plant that has Godzilla cells in it. That's why it becomes like a dinosaur plant. Oh, nice. Yeah. Duh. No, but like go back to what I was saying. I think it's just good, dumb, fun. And just the fact that, you know, you can either see it in theaters or see it in HBO Max. I think it's worth the watch. And I think if you do want these movies to continue, you know, see it, because, you know, I know they're kind of iffy on if they're going to keep on going with these, because I know Godzilla, the King of the Monsters didn't do well.
All right. Before we get into our review, I figured we could talk about Wes Craven and his filmography a little bit. Maybe mention some movies that we have seen of his that we really liked. Well, for one, we're going to be reviewing Scream later, so I feel like we should probably not talk about that. But I think we can all agree, if we're reviewing Scream, we like it. Yeah.
I mean, we were all, I'm sure, partly raised on Scream as far as, you know, our horror background.
Couple movies I wanted to touch on. I really liked The Hills Have Eyes, which the original that came out, and I think it was in the late 70s. I don't want to give dates anymore because of a former guest upsetting me and calling me out for being wrong, but I believe it was
never going to trust yourself again for any dates.
Never will. But the original Hills Have Eyes I thought was pretty good. And I think, like, as he's gone on, you know, he's made quite a few great movies. For me, my favorite of his is Nightmare on Elm Street.
I really like Nightmare on Elm Street. I think Red Eye is kind of a sneaky good one that people don't ever talk about, but I like Red Eye.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually saw it in the theaters. That was a newer one,
but it's good. What's his name? Cillian Murphy and Rachel McAdams. It's a good, it's just got a good vibe to it. Almost like a Hitchcockian type thriller. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's been a while since I've seen it. I don't know if it aged well or not, but yeah, I mean, so like, I guess just like in comparison with John Carpenter, like, were the peak of their careers kind of happened congruently, or
they both kind of were at like the peak of their powers, I think, in like the, well, it would seem in the 80s. Then John Carpenter, he kind of waned as the 90s went on, and his movies kind of were considered not quite as good. And, you know, Wes Craven, it was like because of Scream, he had this big resurgence in like the mid 90s. So Trevor, what are some Wes Craven movies maybe that you...
Well, you pretty much described a lot of the ones that I've seen in the past, but the one that actually I can definitely tell you that I've seen like when I was a child, my dad, so he used to work at ShopRite, and they had the video rental places. Mm-hmm. So he would bring movies home. And the one movie that I remember as a child, like probably my first Wes Craven movie I ever saw, was Swamp Thing. And that is actually one of my favorite DC characters. I'm pretty glad that Wes Craven did this movie because like the effects are really like gruesome and grotesque, a lot like how Alan Moore wrote Swamp Thing and drew him. And it's a good movie. I think it's very underrated. I have good memories about it, and you know, I like Wes Craven films too. So it's like kind of like a gateway drug almost.
It's funny because the way Wes Craven, I guess, seems to approach the material is a little different than John Carpenter. Whereas John Carpenter is more, he's more visually oriented in sort of the filmmaking, the framing. Whereas Wes Craven's a little bit more analytical. He pulls a lot of stuff from like his experiences in life and kind of goes with like things that he thinks would be scary to him or aspects that are like biographical. When you hear him talk about movies, it's very interesting because even though they're like, you know, cheesy horror movies or whatever, he will talk about them like they are like these really deep and intellectual things. And it's just interesting how he brings a lot to it that maybe isn't, that's more subtle or not as like overt or obvious to like viewers that are just watching it for entertainment.
It's interesting to kind of look at them side by side. I think there are some similarities in their approach, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just like coming from watching The Thing and then watching Nightmare on Elm Street, I think just they both really excel at kind of earning their shocking moments. They're not just like thrown in there. You know, it's when they happen, you know, they really hammer it home. And I feel like a lot of newer horror films can get a little lazy in that department. It's like, you know, shocking us for the sake of shocking us. And they really work up to it, it feels like, from a filmmaking perspective. And it's just like I was saying about The Thing earlier, how like, you know, it's such an old film at this point, but it still holds up so well. It's so shocking. And I feel like I got a lot of that in Nightmare as well.
Well, I think it's like also when watching some of these older classics and watching some newer horror, it's so nice to see movies like where you can actually see stuff in the dark. Like a lot of these indie horror movies, a lot of it's probably like budgetary restraints and stuff. But it's like if you have a light on in your room and you're watching one of those movies, it's like it's hard to see stuff. So you have to turn the lights off to see what's here, what's there when they're in the dark. But like you watch, you know, things from like John Carpenter, Wes Craven, like dark is still dark, but they also have stuff where you can actually see like down a corridor and things like that. There's a lot of contrast that actually looks natural, even though it's probably like really well lit.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. It's like they both have an ability to make ordinary things seem scary when, like you're saying, newer films, they're like, oh, this might not be scary enough. Well, what's scary? Just make it darker. Like everything's scary in the dark. And they also, these new films rely a lot on like the fake out jump scares. And I think one in Nightmare, but you know, we'll that was, it was kind of less prominent of a thing back then. And it also, I think, was just one of them. So it's not like, I feel like I've seen some new ones that it's like the first third of the movie, it's not any real scares. Like anything that's like a jump scare is just like a fake out scare.
Right. And even like the trailers, they have the tail end of it, they have the jump scare. They want you that to be the hook that you want to see the movie.
Oh, yeah. And then another thing, like think about going back to Halloween, just how scary Michael Myers was in the daylight. You know, it wasn't like even when he was just following him around. So it like...
It's also like the techniques that they use, that pretty classical stuff. Just you see something with like an outline beside the camera. So you see it's like kind of a perspective shot what Michael is looking at, you know, and it just feels creepy to see someone who's being watched and they don't know it. Or with like Nightmare, I think they have a lot of shots that it's questionable if you're in a dream or not, you know.
Yeah.
The distinction gets blurred and they are able to use that effectively to create a lot of tension.
Absolutely.
Maybe this is a good time to pivot and go into actual, you know, our actual review of Nightmare. So Jason, for those that have been living under a rock, can you tell us the synopsis for the movie?
All right. It's time for the synopsis. The J synopsis, as I'm going to start calling it.
Oh God.
That's going to get cut.
Oh boy. Sorry. Yeah, I'm cutting
out. I'm not doing the podcast anymore.
if Trevor thinks it's cheesy, you know you fucked up.
You lost the guy. Sorry.
Yeah. The guy.
We lost the guy and his webcam.
Yeah. All right.
A group of teenagers start having similar nightmares in which they're hunted by a disfigured man with knife hands named Freddy Krueger. The group soon realizes that these nightmares have real life consequences. If Freddy kills them in their dreams, they die for real. John, you've already established you're a big fan of this film, right? So what are your thoughts overall? Where does this kind of fall into the classics for you?
So, all right. So initially I was more of a Michael Myers guy. I loved the Halloween series. That one's scary because a guy is coming and he is gonna kill you. And like I was like, this character, he's making like goofy jokes as he's like killing people in their dreams, and I go, bah, who needs to sleep? Now me as an adult, not being able to sleep is fucking terrifying.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because like if you think about it, you're like, well, I could avoid Haddonfield mental institutes, and if I see a big tall guy with a weird mask, just avoid him. But Freddy is like, you have to stay up and not sleep. And it's like, I love sleeping. It's my one respite from
and it should be life. A safe place. Yeah. It should be a place of calmness and relief. And yeah, I agree. I mean, not being able to sleep is a pretty horrifying notion. And then on top of that, you know, you're waking up with scars and marks and scrapes and everything from your nightmare. Like, nope.
It's a scary prospect. You know, Johnny Boy likes to sleep. So, Trevor, what are your thoughts on the movie?
I will definitely say I'm in the same boat as you. You know, I prefer my serial killers to be the strong, silent type. You know, prefer like with Michael and Jason, but like Freddy, like I when I came into this movie, I was not a really like I said a Freddy fan, but like I kind of get the idea of like why he toys with them, because he knows that he's got them where he wants them. You know, he knows that they're
in his world.
Exactly. Like he's God, like he's God of the where he's at. And
it's like a game for him almost.
You know, it's like more of a thrill of the kill situation. So, you know, I definitely liked the movie a lot more than going into it. I originally was like, well, maybe it's not going to be that great, but it was good. I loved it a lot.
I liked it more than I originally thought as well, because apparently I originally just watched the remake and that was the only one I'd seen. So
I imagine Jason biting his tongue this whole time being like, oh, you want to review that? Well, piece of shit?
I gotta admit, I wasn't super thrilled going into it. I was like, oh, it was okay. And then I started watching the original and I was like, oh, I haven't seen this one. I saw the one from 2000 whatever. It's quite bad. Don't watch that one.
Where's the guy from The Watchmen?
But I really enjoyed this film. I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of a young me and think of how scared I would have been of Freddy Krueger. Because I think Freddy's a little silly sometimes. Oh, yeah. A little silly. But then he's also very creepy. He balances it out well. But, you know, like that the creepy voice he has at the end and, you know, just the when he gets those really long arms, that freaked me out.
Yeah.
I don't need to see that again.
Well, also they do a nice job of covering his face. So you just mostly see it in shadows.
Yeah.
So it actually looks like burn marks. Whereas like the later films, it's kind of just like, oh, it's just like a mask almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
He looks like a pizza.
Yeah. It's nice to see a different kind of like iconic killer, but like he talks and he doesn't wear a mask. Mm-hmm. So it's like a very different sort of thing. And like also his finger knives, that's like a different kind of killing instrument than what you see. You know, like Michael has the knife, Leatherface chainsaw, you know, so like it's like another iconic killer, but it's like very different from the others.
Yeah. Yeah. They did a great job of kind of separating Freddy from more of a, I guess what we would call like the classical serial killer, which I guess we all kind of have Michael Myers in our mind for the prototype of that.
Right. Right.
And, yeah. He's a great character.
Also, he's very artistic in his killings. Like,
yeah,
he knows how to make like the scary imagery.
Yeah.
Where he's like, okay, I'm going to kill this person, but it's going to be like the blood spraying on the walls as it blood's turning. And
it's interesting. It was like some of the kills had kind of like a little Argento to them.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I definitely was reminded of at least the original Suspiria during some of the kills.
This is the first of the like slasher films we're going through that is like, I think the fully formed, what you think of as a slasher is this movie. You know, it's got the tropes, it's got just buckets and buckets of blood and gore and stuff. And, you know, you look at Texas Chainsaw or Halloween, like those movies aren't bloody. There's a visceralness that makes you feel like you've seen more than you really saw. But this one really shows you the blood.
Right.
Yeah. Texas Chainsaw's, I would call that more gory, but Nightmare is bloody. Like it's just like buckets of blood, bloody.
Oh yeah. And it's also nice that the premise allows for kind of the it's just an artistic angle of how to express some of this, like ways to scare people in this like bizarre imagery.
Yeah.
And another thing I want to touch on before we actually get to like going through the plot of the movie, I want to bring up that it kind of reminded me a little bit of like Stephen King's books a little bit, in that it shows like childhood trauma. And a lot of times that childhood trauma is invisible to the adults. So throughout most of the movie, Nancy is not like the things she's going through are not the things her family is caring about whatsoever.
Right.
And like, she's trying to stay up. The other kids are staying up. They all have the similar dreams, you know? So you have this kind of element there. So you have that. Then you have consequences of what the adults did to Freddy, and like kind of like the sins of the parents are, you know, brought upon the kids. And like, if you think about anything to do with like child abuse and stuff, a lot of times that stuff, there's like a cyclical nature to that. And right. And then also I was seeing something else where it was like, Freddy is kind of like almost like the ultimate boogeyman. They go to bed and they're not safe. Their parents can't protect them from this predator.
Yeah. Not only can they not protect them, they also really aren't receptive to them when they tell them what's happening. They're like, oh, you're just a kid. Just you're blowing it out of proportion. Yeah. It's the same thing sometimes with trauma. It's like, well, they're a kid. They thought it was this or that, you know, and then the child is kind of left on their own to, you know, just go through this nightmare essentially on, mm-hmm. you know, on their own. So, yeah, that's, you know, an interesting subtext to all of this. And I think it adds, you know, an intriguing layer to the film. It's, I guess, something that can kind of be lost if you just view it kind of at a surface level. But, mm-hmm. you know, as kind of, you know, this allegory for whatever childhood trauma, you know, it's very effective.
The reason why I bring it up is because I think this speaks to Wes Craven, and like kind of what he does is that he kind of bakes all this stuff into the story. But it's not really like, I don't know, it's not like this subtext that's like in your face, sort of like, in order to understand the plot of the movie, you have to understand the subtext of it or something. Yeah. You know, it right. works completely on its own. But if you kind of just think about it a little bit, you start to see these little elements come together and you go, oh, like this is kind of a pretty fully formed thesis, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So I think that's a interesting and important point. All right. Let's get into the plot of the movie. All right. So the first thing we see is Freddy making his little classic finger knives. And, you know, I don't know if they're really that practical, but they are very scary nonetheless.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like Wolverine where they retract.
Yeah.
I think they're kind of just there, you know?
Yeah.
If he's at the ATM or something.
I guarantee you, I would have so many cuts on my forehead because I would like,
I forget.
Wipe my forehead and be like, shit, wrong hand. God damn it.
Do you think he ever went to do like the kill sign to somebody and got a little too close and was like, all right, I'm not doing that again. Fuck.
Yeah. But it's nice though that he's all about the craft of serial killing. You know, it's a trade for him anyway. So next thing we get Tina, who is she has a brief dream where she goes into a boiler room and Freddy attacks her, and then she wakes up and she's got like a cut through her nightgown of like the finger knives.
Yeah.
So she's a little shaken up because she's like, how the hell did I do that? And then I think the mom says something about
cut your nails.
You know, your nails are too long. Which, when does that happen?
Well, that's just right off the bat. Like, a mom not seeing these signs of trauma. Like, it's very clearly like shredded. Yeah. And she's like, oh, it's definitely your fingernails.
She's more upset that Tina cried out or freaked out and the mom is hanging out with her boyfriend and he seems like a real winner, honestly.
He's like, hey, baby, you coming back to bed or what? What's he say? Who says that?
I don't remember what he looks like, but I'm just in my head, even though I just watched it again last night, I'm just picturing Dennis Franz in like a wife beater shirt or something. The next day at school, she is a little shaken up, telling her friends about it. And, you know, so we get to meet her friends, Nancy and Glenn, Nancy being the main character, Glenn being Johnny Depp in his first movie role. Correct?
Oh, yeah. So boyish.
Oh, he looks like a normal human back then. Look at that, you know. So that's cool. I love that also that like, we'll get to this later, but Glenn is quite the fuck up throughout this movie.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
We're introduced to them, and Tina has a boyfriend named Rod. Oh, my God. Which, I don't know, has anyone met a good Rod? Is it anyone named Rod like still around? I don't know.
That's an appropriate name for him. He's a real Rod.
Man, like he's literally the worst human being I've ever met, and he's not real.
Like at first I thought he was just like sexually harassing Tina, and then it's like turns out it's, you know, her boyfriend.
Well, you know, there's something weird when like later on she tells the friends, like, hey, you guys are going to stick around, right? You can't, like, leave me alone with this guy. What the fuck? So the main plot starts, and we find that Tina's mother is going to be out of town, so she has Nancy and Glenn come over to keep her company because she's scared. We find out that Nancy and possibly Glenn both had the same dream about Freddy Krueger, and none of them take it to be, like, they think, oh, what a weird coincidence, and not like, well, that's really fucking troubling.
Yeah.
If I, like, it was always an irrational fear of mine when I was younger, if I, like, had the same dream as someone, like, that it had something really profound. Yeah. I don't know. I had an irrational fear of that. And avalanches. I always thought, like, avalanches were a thing, but that's neither here nor there. But we also get a nice glimpse into Glenn. Just being a royal screw up, because he, like, is trying to pretend that he's at his uncle's house, which is by, like, what, a train station or an airport or something?
Airport.
And he has a little sound effects tape queued up, but he calls his mom before he even puts the tape in. Like, he called her.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, mom, I'm here, like, fumbling through the tape. And then, like, the sound effect itself is like 10 seconds long. So it goes into other sound effects.
Yeah. I'll call the police, mom. I got to go.
That's a silly dumbo reel. So that's what he does.
We established early on that he's not the brightest bulb in the box. Oh, for sure. Man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you listen to any more recent interviews with Johnny Depp, it seems about right. That's but anyway, so they hear a noise, they go outside, and it's fucking Rod is being a dick.
That was the fake out jump scare that they got at the beginning.
And then he somehow, even though he's hanging out with his girlfriend and his girlfriend's friends, he pulls out a knife on Glenn for no reason. And we
classic
already know
Rod.
Yeah, we already know Glenn's a screw up. Not much of a threat. And then Rod's like, oh, I better take out my knife. But we all know that the reason why is later they need to find the knife on him that they think is the murder weapon. But
I've never met a Rod that didn't have, like, a little boot knife or something.
I think Rod Stewart has one all the time, too.
So anyway, Rod and Tina, they go upstairs, and listen, they have sex.
Naughty.
And it sounds like the way that, like, Glenn is sitting there listening to it is like they've been going for hours and hours. And he's like all mad because, like, he tried to put the moves on Nancy and she was like, we have to be here for Tina. You need to stop. So I guess what we're supposed to understand is that Nancy is sleeping in Tina's bed, Glenn's sleeping on the couch, and the other two are in the parents' bedroom just going to town. So we get Tina. She wakes. She hears some noises outside. And while that's happening, Nancy's, like, laying on the bed, and you see, like, the, like, Freddy trying to push through the wall, which is really creepy, but also I would also like to press through that wall.
Yeah, it looks like spandex or a latex balloon or something.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. I'm sorry. Then we get Tina decides, okay, I'm hearing all these noises, I'm gonna go outside and see what's going on. She goes outside and she sees Freddy in the dark in the shot that Jason that made Jason piss himself, where he's got the long arms. And he's like chases after her, and then they're like tussling around, and then it cuts to her in her bed tussling around in the under the sheets, and Rod finally wakes up, runs to the corner to see what's going on. And then I think this is probably one of the most gruesome murders in the movie, where you just see her body, like, contorting against the wall, then the ceiling, and the blood's going everywhere, and you see, like, marks appearing on her body. It's pretty brutal.
It's creepy too, because it's like very, like, Exorcist-esque.
Oh yeah.
Just like that stuff always creeps me out.
Yeah, because it's like, because she's contorting, like, to a thing you can't see.
And you can't see Freddy, so she's just, like, pinned against the ceiling and the wall. And
it looks like, I'm guessing that the way they shot it is that they dressed the floor to look like the ceiling. So she's, like, kind of rolling around on there. But
that's a good point.
Yeah. It's pretty, like, very, I mean, it still is shocking to me, even though, like, you know, I've seen it a few times. So,
well, you know, Rod doesn't handle this well. Hot Rod over here, he's like, he gets, like,
We have to call him Hot Rod the rest of the episode.
he gets like knocked down, yeah, and he's like in the corner, and then he just kind of turns into an observer for a little bit. And
well, to be fair, if you saw that shit happening, would you want any part of that, or would you be like, this is not my fight?
I don't know. I don't think I would just sit in the corner. Like, if I was out, I'd probably be out. Like, I would leave the room.
Just start roaring, yeah. Tina. Go, Tina, go! Fight him!
Yeah, you're right, though. I probably would open the door and yell for other people to come and like, hey, am I crazy?
Didn't he say he thought he was dreaming, too, or she was just having a bad dream? Like
Something like that. Yeah, no, it was pretty wild.
I saw what happened, and I'm still suspicious of Rod. So
yeah, exactly.
His name's Rod. Like, come on. Let's be honest. Well, he doesn't make it easy on himself because he jumps out the window. And then they break
natural
in.
Response.
Yeah, they break in and like they're like, what happened here? And then Rod is gone.
That is that's very incriminating. Like, just go down the stairs.
Well, things don't end well for Hot Rod here.
poor Ronnie.
So next we see Nancy wakes up. She's going to school, and her mom is like, are you sure about this? Your best friend was just murdered, but we'll let you go to school anyway. And we find out later why they let her go is because her dad was tailing her to catch Rod. Which Rod is still shirtless, still has blood on him, but he has his awesome leather jacket, and he grabs Nancy and he's like, hey, they think I did it. I was like, because you look guilty right now. Because
you jumped out a window without your clothing and you're hiding in the woods, Rod.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for Rod, that's a Tuesday. So I mean.
So the cops chase him and he tries to run, and the father borderline might have shot Rod right in the face if Nancy hadn't stood in front of him. Which, so her father, I should mention, her father is, he's a cop played by John Saxton, who was the main cop in Black Christmas. Now, one of the things that's interesting about this is in Black Christmas, he was very useful as a cop. In this one, not at all.
Not so much.
It's mostly him not listening to his daughter or not solving any crimes or murders. They arrest Rod and they're like, well, that's it for us. We don't have to do anything more.
Job well done, boys. Yeah. Let's go to the bar.
Well, there's like a large portions of this movie where he meets up. So he goes somewhere and then he sees his daughter there. And it's like, you live in the same house. How are you always running into each other somewhere else? So, well, I think that also shows the point of like, him not being aware of anything about like the inner life of his like daughter or what she's going through.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Next we see Nancy. She's in class, and I think this scene is pretty fucked up, where she's sitting there and she kind of falls asleep. Okay, let me backtrack for a second. One of the things I like about how they have these dream sequences, it's never like a lot of it's not completely someone falling asleep and then it's like, oh, we're in dream space. It's like someone sitting somewhere, then all of a sudden something weird happens and you're like, oh, she's probably dreaming now.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you don't really see them like dozing off.
Yeah.
Right.
So she's sitting in class, she looks over and she sees Tina in a body bag, all bloody, and then like this blood trail, and she follows it, down to the boiler room.
That was a creepy shot, by the way, when you like first see Tina in the bag.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So creepy.
Yeah.
I think like just because we were talking about this before about some of the other movies that they would come up with some of these ideas of like, what would be something that as a normal person, you wouldn't really think about certain like aspects of like a murder scene or whatever. And like a lot of these horror movies really do well is when they come up with ideas or shots of things that would be like, yeah, if you're a coroner, you would see someone in like a body bag and there'd be some blood in the bag or something like that, But, yeah. A normal person maybe wouldn't really immediately think about that. But then you get this imagery in there that is really striking.
Yeah. And it's like standing up in a body bag too. Like
that's, not great, Bob.
No, thanks.
So she follows the body bag, the trail of blood. So she goes to the boiler room, which is always good things happen there. So inside the boiler room, Freddy's messing with her, and then she burns her arm on one of these like pipes, and then she wakes up in class. And surprise, surprise, the burn is still on her arm. So she realizes what happens in dreams happens to her real body. So
right. And that's something that Tina probably could have and should have tipped them off to, the fact that she was sliced up at the beginning. Yeah. What's interesting too is that like she's burned, and that's almost what wakes her up. So it's interesting that they don't wake up more when they're like traumatized in the dream, like if a burn can kind of wake her up. But she's in class, so something else could have, you know, corresponded with waking her up.
When Tina woke up, she was scratched and it went through her shirt, so obviously it scratched her body and that woke her up. But I guess a lot of times the murder part is so quick that they don't really wake up in time for them to be like, oh, okay, I'm out of this dream now. An interesting aspect of the movie, I think, is that there are some rules that they explain, but there's also a lot of stuff that goes on that's a little more unknowable, which it does add to some of the scariness of it.
Well, what's creepy too is that, like, I feel like Freddy could have pretty easily killed them earlier in the film, but he's almost like toying with them. Like, he knows they're going to have to fall asleep again. You know, he'll chase them and get his fun in, but I don't know. I feel like Freddy's a little more capable than what the early, I don't know. I just feel like he takes pride in messing with them.
Well,
it
does seem, I think it's explained later, that it's probably that he gains more power from their fear. So him killing them isn't ultimately the main goal. It's kind of like getting as much fear out of them as possible. And that when he kills them, that makes other people scared.
Yeah.
So it's like almost like a thing that needs to occur, but the scare portion is more what he is going for than.
Yeah. And he's just charging up a little bit.
Yeah.
Just getting a little Krueger charge up.
All right. So Nancy, she goes to see Rod at the police station. And he explains basically everything that we understand about how she died, how Dina died. And Nancy kind of, as soon as she gets it, she's like, all right, and like leaves.
Toodles.
I'm like, if you're Rod, it's like, you believe me, right? Yeah. And then she leaves. Like, I don't know where.
Am I getting out of here?
Yes. Can you talk to your dad, please?
Are they going to give me my knife back?
Next, we see Nancy. She's in the tub, and we get a very uncomfortable shot where she's like in like a bubble bath, and then you see Freddy's hand come out of the water, and it's like between her legs.
Oh yeah,
which is like, I mean, doesn't take a smart guy to realize, well, that's some sexual imagery right there. You know, she wakes up and the hand disappears. And then I think, what was it? He pulls her underwater at one point, and then she's underwater and he's like trying to kill her or whatever. So then she gets out and wakes up. So the next scene we got, Glenn comes over and Nancy asks him, stay awake. I'm going to try to find Freddy in my dream. And that stupid dumbass falls asleep too. And it's like,
he doesn't even try to stay awake.
No, he didn't give it. He didn't try at all. Like, and if I were her, I would have woken up just from the anger of realizing that stupid bastard. He had one job.
It's like, it's not like he doesn't have skin in the game either. He's having the same dreams. Like, he should know better.
He's such a fuck up. He doesn't even realize that he's next.
Well, he might be up late at night, you know, practicing, you know, his, you know, stereo thing with, you know, like, well, I need to make sure it's at the airport, so let's make sure the airplane plays sound, you know.
He's such an annoying guy too, because it's like he's listening to music, he's got this portable TV that he's sitting on the bed with him and he's watching it, but he's listening to music, and it's like, pick one thing, buddy. Like,
yeah,
all right, come on. Anyway,
he's not even a weenie either.
He's like a jock.
I don't even think you can. Yeah, you can't even dub him as weenie. He's like just like a dumbass.
He's a dumbass. That's correct. Yes. You know, like, I gotta say, people don't say dumbass as much as they should, you know?
Yeah.
If you see two people arguing and one person calls the other one a dumbass, you don't think, oh man, why is that guy mad? You go, what did that dumbass do? So, yeah, no, he's a dumbass. This is now canon for our podcast.
Red Foreman was ahead of his time. He knew.
So anyway, in the dream, we get Nancy's walking around. And I think she goes to the jail police station and sees Rod in the jail cell. And then Freddy's about to kill him or something. And then he looks up and sees Nancy and decides to chase after her. And so he chases after her and into her room, where in her dream, Glenn is sleeping as well. She knows deep down he's a fuck up.
Yeah, she went to sleep expecting him to fall asleep.
Multiple levels. The only thing that saves her is that her alarm goes off. She wakes up and then gets really mad at Glenn and chews him out, which was awesome.
She doesn't even trust him, and like, she still sets an alarm because she's like, he's probably not gonna stay awake.
And then she decides, oh shit, is Rod going to be okay? So she like runs to the police station. And while all this is happening, Rod was sleeping, but then feels the sheets wrapping around his neck. And he's like, well, that's not good. And then he gets hung, which leads to a very bizarre eulogy by the priest.
He had some words for
which, yeah. I've never seen a priest ever give any sort of like negative opinion on someone.
Well, he was never even put on trial. Like, it was like he was still in a holding cell. He's just like, yeah, this guy did it.
Well, if you live by the sword, you die by the sword. What the fuck kind of message is that? You don't even know. And then he says something about like, judge not lest ye be judged. It's like, you just judged him.
Yeah, you literally judged him.
What a shitty priest. So then we get a whole thing where Nancy says something to her mom about like how Freddy looks, and the mom looks troubled. So the next scene is, all right, well, we need to get her some help. So they take her to like a sleep clinic, right? And then,
yeah, this is a good scene.
This is so the sleep clinic, they're watching her as she's trying to sleep, and they're like, yeah, so the numbers, they seem all right, you know, she's doing okay. Then all of a sudden things start happening. She's shaking in the bed and the numbers are, oh, they're off the charts, this can't be right. So they go in there and they like go to wake her up, and she's got, you know, cuts on her arm, and then she's like, I got a hat. Right? So no one thinks, where did this hat really come from? She's a prop comic now. What is going on?
Some local incels missing their hat.
Regular Carrot Top over here, right? Then there's like a whole back and forth with the mother not believing Nancy's issues. I don't think we need to get too far into like scene to scene on that, but basically, we got Nancy, she just keeps drinking coffee and not sleeping, and the mother just keeps drinking alcohol
and gets, walking a liquor store. Yeah,
really sloppy as the movie goes on.
When did that transition happen with the mom? Because she was like normal-ish
at first, yeah.
And then she just starts like drinking herself into comas.
I think we're supposed to believe that all of the Freddy Krueger stuff before, when they killed him, was something that stuck with them, and that they were all kind of like trying to like keep invisible for their kids not to know this was going on.
Yeah.
So I assume like part of it is like she's drinking as a result of this, but it's trying to
a lot of suppressed guilt. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, the thing we did to protect our children is making it worse. Fuck.
But they also don't believe the kids either, really. Well,
that's the thing, though, because it's like they don't want to believe them at first. And then as like they're like the kids are telling them details about like, well, he's got these finger knives, and they're like, oh, that looks a lot like the one Freddy had.
But shouldn't the alarm bells go off? Because how else would they have known about that? You know, it's just like
Well, also, I think by this point, though, it's become sort of like a school like legend where the kids are singing, you know,
right.
One, two, Freddy's coming for you.
Yeah, right. It's just like a part of local folklore or something at this point.
Exactly. So yeah, maybe that's why they think it's not real at first. But then over time, it's like, well, they're not just making it up if they keep like being tormented, you know?
Right. But like, regardless, like her daughter's still going through something, like at least they had the sense to put her through this, you know, sleep study, which, you know, it showed that something is clearly going on. But then the mom is like putting her child in more danger by not being able to help her. Well, and then just like boarding up the house.
I think her problem is she's trying to figure out, is it 5 o'clock somewhere so she can go get the bottle?
Well, it's also like, it's not like she has like a bunch of like, the bottles change in size. They're all these big liquor bottles.
And didn't she pull one out of like the linen closet? Like, yeah, this is like a theme. This is a theme with these films, because we got that in Black Christmas too. Just
they love just real sloppy people. So anyway, so like there's a scene where Nancy comes back home and the mom has put all these like bars on the windows. It's very hard to get out of the house now, which obviously won't come back later to haunt those characters. That would never happen in a horror movie. But so finally, after some prodding, and it didn't take much prodding in this scene to be like, all right, fine, we'll tell you about Fred. All right, come downstairs, which I would think like, I don't want to go downstairs.
Well, she's a little tuned up too, probably. Oh, yeah. So exactly. She's like, check this out.
A few Long Islands still do it.
Check out like the murder weapon that I stole.
Want to wear it?
Look at it. We killed him. Yeah.
You're old enough to have a drink, Nancy. Just pours like a really tall glass of her whatever. Like,
but it's very weird that the wife of a cop having like evidence that would prove that they killed a person in the house, like it's just in the basement. It'd be pretty easy to find. You're like, oh,
yeah, it's jammed in like a wood stove or something.
Yeah,
and like, you know, if they would ever try to light that, it'd burn the house down because it's jammed. But
and if it was like his sweater, I'm like, well, it could be anybody's sweater, but no, it's his the weapon. It's the weapon. It's probably got blood and DNA on it.
Oh yeah. Anyway, so Nancy calls Glenn and she's got an idea. She's going to bring Freddy out of the dream and into the real world. And of course, the number one person you get as your like teammate to like beat the shit out of somebody in a very important way, you go for Glenn, the dumbass.
I can't believe he got a second chance.
Here's the thing. She didn't seem that mad at him still. She seemed like, okay.
She was mad initially when she almost died, and then she kind of got over it.
She's like, okay, we're going to meet at midnight. You're going to come over. I'm going to go to sleep. You're going to watch me and wake me up if there's a problem. Then you're going to kill Freddy. And wouldn't you know it, that did not turn out that way at all. Because Glenn's parents were like, intercepted the phone call, said, oh, you know, he's going to bed. Call him tomorrow. And of course, Glenn fell asleep again.
Yeah.
And then he gets such a gruesome death, which was amazing, right? Like, he just gets like devoured by the bed and then it just spits out all the blood everywhere. And the mom like vaguely witnesses like the ending of it, which couldn't have happened to a nicer guy, right?
Like when they're like looking at that crime scene, they're like, is he dead? And there's like blood dripping from the ceiling. Like it had seeped through the floor into the lower level.
Also, I'd love to find out if this was the first time someone said something like, where's the coroner? He's in the bathroom puking his guts out.
Yeah. What do they say? They're like, you'll need a body bag. You need a mop or something. Yeah.
It's like they say that in like every like SVU episode, but like in this situation, it's actually true. Like, oh yeah, no, that's awesome. Not awesome. That's awful. So the finale of the movie, we get to Nancy. She sets a bunch of Home Alone style booby traps.
Oh yeah. She goes full Kevin McAllister on the house. It's awesome. Well, she's also earlier in the film reading a book like about booby traps, which is right, cool. Yeah. Like I want to just read that book. I don't necessarily want to do them. I just want to know how to do them.
At one point, it looks like she makes an IED too. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that little light bulb.
Yeah, she made a shotgun light bulb. So she goes to sleep. What I think she does is in the dream, she sets an alarm for herself as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
smart.
Yeah. So she finds Freddy and he chases her. Isn't it something like she jumps somewhere and then she like falls outside of her house and then like he's there attacking her and she grabs him. She wakes up and she's like, oh, I'm awake. I think this would count as a jump scare where he jumps from the side of the bed and attacks her.
Yeah. I am here.
Yeah. So she runs out of the door, locks the door, and he seems to have a little bit of problem with that. I was a little surprised that was so much of an issue for that.
Yeah, this is when we get the silly Freddy a little bit. Like, he has trouble with doorknobs and stuff.
You realize the food. My only weakness. So
he opens the door. Sledgehammer hits him in the body and then goes down the stairs. She shoots the shotgun light bulb at him. It doesn't really do all that much to him, honestly. And so she's screaming at the door, help, help, screaming to her dad. Her dad's across the street helping mop up Glenn. And the other cops are like, oh, should we get the guy? I don't know. And so then she runs downstairs and probably not a smart move. Lights Freddy on fire in the house that she's locked in and can't get out of. I don't know if that's a good idea. So we get the cops. They break in. Takes them a long time. And then all of a sudden, it's like the father reunites with the daughter. Where's Freddy? Freddy is upstairs with the drunk mom and on top of her. What?
Well, I mean, she's very flammable because of all the alcohol.
So this is where it gets a little, I think, is like the weirdest part of the movie. Freddy disappears with the mother and she's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then the father's like sees it. So now he finally understands what's been going on with his daughter, that Freddy is real and doing this stuff. And then he's like, all right, well, I'm going to leave the room. And then Freddy reappears and we get Nancy. She's saying, what does she say? She's like not afraid of him anymore. It just keeps her back turned to him. And then he disappears.
He like lunges at her and like disappears as he's lunging. He doesn't have enough like fear fuel or whatever. Yeah,
mm-hmm. It was almost like he got a little sparkly as he disappeared. Or something.
Yeah.
It was an odd effect. But and then we get to, it looks like a dream. The mom is alive again and she's saying goodbye to Nancy. Nancy gets in the car with her dead friends. They're all dead, but now they're alive.
Mm-hmm.
And then the car turns into Freddy Krueger and locks her in and drives away. But then also Freddy like punches through the door's like window behind the mom and pulls her into the house again.
Very effortlessly.
Yeah. It looked like a dummy or something.
Yeah, I was gonna say he was very, very mean to that Sears mannequin.
So that's the end of the movie. And so let's get into kind of, let's contextualize this a little bit in the slasher genre. So this movie came out in 1984, correct?
I'm gonna have to check you. Yeah, 1984. You're right.
Yeah. So at this point now, we're fully in the 80s, the decadence of the 80s. So, mm-hmm. You know, we get more blood. We get to have more fun with our horror. A little cheesier,
right.
A little weirder. And I think this represents that fully, where, you know, we're not going to get like a quiet stalking killer. We're going to get, he's got opinions and he's going to let you know how he feels.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you get like kind of the tropes where, you know, honestly, as soon as you have sex in one of these slasher films, you die.
Thanks a lot, Halloween.
Because it almost seems like a little bit of a morality thing, because Nancy does not want to have sex. And
well, Glenn.
Yeah, she's not sure about Glenn.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I mean, because her excuse earlier was like, no, this is Tina's night. I got to be here for Tina. Like, that didn't really mean anything.
Like, also, it's like,
she still died and they didn't have sex. So
I like that she made him sleep on the couch. Like, buddy, this is a small bed. You're going on the couch.
You got a portable TV. You sit down there, asshole. Yeah.
I did feel bad for him that he just has to hear other people have a fun time. Well, he's just like laying there like, God damn it.
We kind of hit on it earlier, kind of the difference between Michael Myers and Freddy Krueger. And I think they act as kind of nice companions of what slashers could be in that time period. Like, it would have been pretty easy for Wes Craven to just kind of ride that wave and make him much more of like a conventional knife wielding mm-hmm. killer. But he added its own flair to the character, which,
oh, yeah.
you know, they're both so memorable in their own right. And, you know, it doesn't feel like Freddy Krueger is like a Michael Myers knockoff. And it, you know, in lesser hands, it very easily could have ended up that way.
With kind of where we've been going with the series, I thought this was a good ending point to have before we went into the newer slasher films. So I thought it'd be good to bookend this part with a Wes Craven movie. And then the start of the next one is Scream. Another Wes Craven movie. So we can see kind of episode to episode, we can see the huge difference between like an original slasher and then kind of like these self-aware, self-referential slashers that kind of permeated after the Scream came out. So I think that's kind of this is a good place to end this part of the series and to start with Scream. Well, before we, end things here, I did want to ask Trevor.
Yes.
Would you survive this killer?
I probably would, but I might survive on a technicality based on the fact that a lot of my dreams are pretty dumb and like very belittling because like even like being
they're belittling to you.
Well, think about this. I'm still having dreams where I'm like, I'm late for college or I'm like, I'm showing up to college classes like in my underwear and shirts and Freddie be like, I don't want anything to do with this crap.
Like so, Freddie's naked in your dream. And he's like, come on, dude.
Jesus Christ. Have some decorum. No,
I'm done with this guy. I'm always exactly. naked in his dreams.
I think he's like, you know.
Wait, hold on. So your technicality is you'll out embarrass Freddy Krueger.
Yeah. He'll probably be like, this guy's keep taking an L, so I'm not going to even bother with him. He's worse than Glenn, so whatever.
Oh, boy. Well,
poor Glenn.
Because Jason isn't going to ask me, I will say that I think I would definitely not survive Freddy whatsoever. You know, while my dreams, I'm usually very self-aware of everything. Like if I'm dreaming, I know I'm dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, a lot of my dreams don't make sense. And I think he would just appear very quickly and just be like, I'm going to kill you. And I'd be like, no, you don't. I'm dead. So my reaction time is very bad. So he would get me. Jason, what about you?
I'm a pretty light sleeper, honestly. And I'm kind of in the same boat where I like kind of know when I'm dreaming. So I don't know. I feel like I would wake up more often and just, I think he'd kind of get tired of waiting around for me to get into to deep sleep.
Oh, and, Jesus Christ, you didn't go to bed yet. He's watching another movie on the TV.
It's like 3:30 in the morning. And like, sorry, this guy's not gone to bed. He gets bored.
You're getting Freddy when he's tired.
Yeah.
He's not trying as hard. There's like, you go into the boiler room and certain areas of the boiler room are just like white panels because he forgot what goes there.
And whatever. Or like I'm dreaming and like Freddy is sleeping in my dream and I'm like, okay, I'm just hanging out.
I mean, one thing to think about though is Freddy seems to like children or adolescents. We are all adults, so maybe we just wouldn't see anything Freddy does. We would just sleep and tell other people like, oh, it's not real. Stupid.
So we would be the parents not believing the kids. Yeah.
I mean, that's my hope anyway. Because I want to sleep.
To quote Michael Jordan, fuck them kids.
Is that a...
Yeah, it's a direct quote.
Who is the guy that said, how's my ass taste?
Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah, he said that to Kobe, right?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Kobe, how's my ass taste?
All right, that does it for this week's episode. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. Next week, we will be reviewing Scream. Until then,
stab you later. You let me say it.
You let me say it.